No. He seems to me he lived his life like a turd swaying in the wind.
Humperdink?
You never know where to cling to when your turds come in. And I would have liked to have known that speech, but I was just a kid and that speech came out long ago. My turd speech ever did.
Pack him up, Fezzik. We're going to go and try and find a miracle.
Right.
Right.
Oh, miracles.
And so they get to a place called Miracle Max.
Enter Billy Crystal. Shoot.
This is not the first movie that we've done with Billy Crystal in it, by the way.
Yes. If you'd like to hear us rant about how wonderful Billy Crystal is, please view our Studio Ghibli's Howl's Moving Castle episode a few episodes back.
Yeah.
Or not, because I simp pretty hard for Hal in that one.
Fezzik is holding the body in one arm, and they go up to, like, this house, and Nigo knocks on it, and the guy's just like, what do you want? It was like, are you the Miracle Max that the king used to work with all those years?
I used to, but then the king was thinking son fired me.
And thank you for bringing up such a painful memory. Why don't you give me a nice paper cut and pour lemon juice on it? We're closed. And then he slams the door shut, and Inigo has to knock again. And there's this banter back and forth at one point. He says, beat it or I'll call the brute squad.
I'm on the brute squad.
You are the brute squad.
And then it's like, well, this guy needs help. What's wrong with him? He's dead. He's like,
I might kill whoever you want to meet a miracle. Oh, it's okay. He's dead. I was like, okay, bring him in.
I'll take a look. Okay, they get in there. Billy Crystal says a lot of things in the next scene, and you really should watch it, even if it's the clip you find on the internet. Mm-hmm. But he ends up getting the bellows from his fire and filling up Wesley's lungs and then pushing on his stomach to get out whatever it is that... Because Inigo tries to lie to him, and he's just like, oh, his wife and kids are so sick. And he's like, are you a rotten liar? And then he's just like, look, I need his help to revenge my father. And he's like...
Your first lie was better.
Right. So then he gets the bellows. He fills up Wesley's lungs. He's bantering while he does this in a way that it's a pale imitation if I try to tell you about Billy Crystal rambling as this kind of stereotype type of a character. And I can't even tell you what kind of stereotype he is. Right. He's just kind of like this. He's like a Brooklyn guy. He's a miracle guy, but he's also like this all the time. And I don't know exactly what he's imitating right now. But he pushes down on Wesley's stomach and he makes this noise. Everyone's eyes get wide and Miracle Max backs away.
Even he is shocked by it. It's important to know that because Indigo goes in. He's just like, see, it's true love. There's no more noble cause than that.
You're right. There is no more noble cause than that, except for maybe a mutton lettuce tomato and MLT, a mutton lettuce tomato sandwich when the mutton's nice and lean and the tomato's just so perky. But that's not what he said. What he said was to blathe, which you know it means to lie.
And
he probably owes you some money.
And that's when we hear a woman calling him a liar.
Liar!
And he's just like, he's a stop it, Valerie. This is like the third, like, pretty normal name that we've had show up.
Yeah.
And she also says, I'm not a witch, I'm your wife.
And I'm not even sure I want to be that anymore.
And so she's like,
He said true love, Max.
Yeah. And so she kind of like is like saying, you know, you don't want to do this anymore because of the fact that your confidence is shattered by Prince Humperdinck, but you still have to do this because it's the right thing to do. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do this? And they're going back and forth and they're arguing. And then Indigo says, this is Buttercup's true love. If you cure him, you stop Humperdinck's wedding. And
I bring him back to life and Humperdinck suffers.
Humiliations galore.
And then he gets to work.
And then he's excited. He's like, ha, 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 ha. And I wrote down, revenge equals a noble cause.
You know what? Righteous anger has a place. So they have one part that I love is that now they cut to them painting a pill. Mm-hmm. And she's and
brushing it with chocolate.
Yes. And it looks so delicious that as a kid, I was like, I want candy medicine. And she's like, the chocolate coating makes it go down easier. She should wait for 15 minutes for full potency. Right.
Yep.
And like, that's it.
Yeah. And so they put it into, Max blows on it, which in COVID times is a little bit like nana. And he puts it into a bag and then he shoves it off and they leave out and the two of them are at the door all lovey and they're like, bye bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Do you think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye bye. Like, that is a line that I have heard quoted even from like my own dad, who this is probably like the one movie that he would rewatch. that was fantasy related.
Yes.
And secular too.
My dad was is a sci-fi guy. And when I asked him what kind of fantasy book he liked to read, he turned to me and he was like, I like to read sci-fi fantasy books. So if it's got like a spaceship in it, okay, that cuts out a lot of stuff, man. But we've watched Princess Bride together often.
Yeah. And so they go up to the top of a castle. Fezzik says there are 60 men, Indigo. And so they're like,
he's like, what does it matter? We've got him now.
Yeah. And so they put the pill into Wesley's mouth. And like, they were like, so how long do you think it takes? And his eyes like pop open within seconds.
Yes.
And he's just like, I'll take you both together. And they like cover his mouth. And Fezzik's just like, well, I guess it doesn't take too long.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now we have to do a whole bunch of exposition really fast because Wesley hasn't seen these guys since he left them on the side of the mountain.
Right. And he's just like, are we friends? Are we enemies? Where's Buttercup? And he's like, let me explain. Let me sum up.
It's too much. Let me sum up. That's Indigo.
Yeah. And he pretty much gives everything out and saying that we need to break in so that way I can kill Count Rugen. And so that way you can get Buttercup. There's 60 people at the gate. And
there's there's only one way in.
Yeah. And Wesley's just like, if I had a month to plan, maybe. But this? No, I don't have anything. And
Fezzik chimes in. He's like, you just moved your finger. You're doing such a good job.
He's like, I've always been a quick healer. And then he shakes his head when he's like, I can't do this. And Fezzik's just like, you shook your head. Doesn't that, you know, make you happy? And he like, this is part of why I love how animated this movie is because Cary Elwes like thwops his head in this like, I can't actually hold my head up, but I'm still able to move it like a baby.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, his steel, your strength, and my brains and against 60 men. And you think a little head jiggle's going to make me happy?
Then he throws his head back and he's like, oh, if only we had a wheelbarrow. And Indigo's like, well, where do we put the wheelbarrow that the albino is using? And Fezzik's like, over by the albino, I think.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, well, what I would give for a Holocaust cloak. And Fezzik reaches into his poet shirt, pulls out, and he's like, would this do? And he's like, and he goes like, where did you get that? And he's like, at Miracle Max's. I tried it on. He said, it looks so nice. I might as well have it.
It's like they need things in the moment. And also, my note was, I love it when a plan comes together. But also, like, everybody is like putting all of this expectation onto Wesley, who has been mostly dead all day. And he's the one who has to figure it out. And I was like, I can't figure this out. Have you ever been that person who's stuck in that place?
Yeah, we all three of us are that person where somebody's just like, I'm going to hand you a problem. KK, have fun with this. I'm going to walk away from it exactly now.
Mm-hmm.
Wesley Doctor Who'd it.
He truly and without foresight did.
Yeah. And so they like, they walk off.
They stack themselves like cordwood. And like, Indigo's in front. Wesley's laying on his back and Andre's behind him, Fezzik's behind him, like, and they're all like kind of clumped together, moving as like this centipede looking thing off of the turret that they're on, whatever.
And Fezzik's like, hey, Indigo, I hope we win.
Oh.
That's when Humperdinck is with Buttercup and he's just sort of like, I hope you're feeling happy. And she's like, why should I be happy? And I was like, well, brides normally are on their wedding day. She's like, I don't marry today. She's getting ready for the wedding and everything.
Her dress is gorgeous.
Her tiara is gorgeous as well.
Yeah, she has a white metal tiara with all these intricate flowers and stuff. And her gown is a high-waisted baby doll type thing, long train and like silver embellishments over this pale blue. It is everything I've ever wanted in an outfit.
Right. But the scene is important because it lets us know that Buttercup is still convinced that Wesley will come find her. Mm-hmm. And so they go and they're at the wedding, at a Catholic wedding with the impressive clergyman.
Catholic. Let's be fair.
Yeah.
At what point does she have the conversation with the king about
when they're walking back
after the ceremony? There's the wedding scene, and then
they're standing at the altar. Mm-hmm. Is this before this? Because the ceremony starts, and then the stuff happens at the gate. So
right.
It turns to this clergy person who's standing at the altar, and he looks very regal with his tall, pointy hat and his very ornate robe, and he's all like. He turns around and you're like, oh, what kind of great speech is he going to give? And then he's like, marriage.
The actor's name is Peter Cook. And he's
terribly familiar. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Blackadder and a lot of other things.
Okay.
He's noted in the credits as the impressive clergyman.
Mm-hmm.
Marriage is what brings us together today.
Probably the most like iconic speech. Like for all of the iconic things in this movie, like I don't.
people work this into their marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people have had this on their cakes.
Right.
People have put this as their wedding announcements and invitations. When you hear marriage and you're like, I want it to be impressive but fun.
Yeah.
You think of this scene. That dweem within a dweem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this scene cuts with everything going on at the front gate, which is pretty much Fezzik in a big robe on a wheelbarrow. But
so it looks like he's levitating in, yeah, is what it looks like. And he looks like this big scary thing. And he's like, I am the Dread Pirate Roberts. There will be no survivors.
And you can very easily tell, like, there's two cuts. You got the cut far away, but it's very obviously a dummy underneath the cloak.
Yes.
And then you got the one up close, which is like Andre the Giant in the cloak. And like, I don't even care about that inconsistency.
Do not care at all.
Because it is hilarious. And I have thoroughly enjoyed this movie so much.
Yes. Okay. So then Indigo's pushing the cart behind him where nobody can see him. And he's got Wesley on his back and he's holding a lamp and he's like, now do I light it? And Wesley's like, no, don't do it. And then
it cuts back to the ceremony, the
there's
wedding.
A whole bunch of commotion outside and they're all looking around and he's like, get on with it.
Yeah. Then they cut back to Fezzik, who's like, I am here, but soon. Oh, I am here. My men are here, but soon you will not be here. And that's when.
Light him.
Yeah, that's when they light him. And so the robe goes up in flames.
All of your worst nightmares are about to come true.
Yeah. And then they're back in the ceremony and Buttercup's like, see, Wesley showed up. Totally told you so.
Get on with it, man and wife. Say man and wife.
And he's like, you're Wesley's dead. And she's like, why is there fear behind your eyes? And then the old guy says man and wife in kind of this confusing, like, dull tone.
Yeah, it doesn't feel official at all. Yeah. And so then now they're rushing down the hallway. And that's when he, like, Humperdinck starts leading the way. And that's when she takes the arm of the king, who's a doddering, dying person, played by somebody adorable as fudge. She's like, she kisses him on the cheek.
Yeah.
He goes, what was that for? And she goes, you've always been so kind to me, seeing as how I'm about to go kill myself. And he's like, oh, that's nice. And then he totters up to his wife and he's like, she kissed me.
Yeah. And so they, at the front gate, Fezzik pulls off his robes, gets the portcullis before it goes up, and he shoves it up.
Now
and
he's in front of Yellen, who's the guy with the key.
And they, so they're like, give us the gate key. And he's like, I don't have a gate key. And Indigo says, Fezzik, rip his arms off. And he's
you mean this gate key?
Yeah. And so they get in and they're walking around. And I think that's the scene with, and then it cuts to like Buttercup and the king.
Oh, maybe I jumped ahead. Sorry about that.
That's okay. But then it goes to them walking around the castle and like Indigo is Fezzik is carrying Wesley and Indigo is like taking point and they like turn a few corners. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you see like Count Rugen and his men going down some other corners and then they.
Carrie always can't stand on his feet. He's kind of like being held by one arm sideways.
Count Rugen and his men meet Indigo and Count Rugen says, kill the giant and the dark one, but leave the third for questioning. And it's kind of creepy.
Yes.
But that's when they attack, but they're no match for Indigo. And
he dispatches both of them really, really quick. And
yeah.
Rugen's like, oh, no.
And he runs away.
Yeah, he just bout faces and goes.
Yeah.
No, does Indigo say his line first?
Oh, yeah. He says his most famous line, the line that spawned so many hello, my name is tags.
Yes.
And hoodies.
Yes.
Hello.
I had that shirt, too, by the way.
My name is Indigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Beautiful. And that's when Rugen's like, lates, peeps, bye. And like about faces and runs away as mm-hmm. fast as he can.
Yeah.
He runs down a corridor. He throws himself behind a door and he locks it behind himself. Indigo gives chase and Fezzik's walking along with Wesley. But then when Indigo can't get through the door, he's like, oh, and the desperation in his voice. He's like, Fezzik, help. I need your help. He's like, I've got this guy. He's like, he's getting away from me. And the feeling is so palpable that Fezzik just kind of drapes Wesley through the arm of a set of chain link or armor, mm-hmm. some plate armor, I should say, in the hallway and like walks down the hallway and then just boofs the door open.
I would also like to note that when Indigo chases Count Rugen, the music, both Wesley and Fezzik look at each other and the music kind of like shifts. And then when Indigo gets to the door, mm-hmm. you hear him like throwing himself against the door. And every time he does it, you hear these big like bums in the music.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it is. And then he gives chase and Fezzik goes back, but Wesley is nowhere to be found.
Yeah, he's like, what? Yeah. Like, he didn't expect him to get away.
Yeah. And so Indigo, you see Count Rugen like running down some steps and he pulls out like this knife.
He runs, yeah, down through this stairway into a banquet hall.
Yeah. And
probably the wedding banquet hall.
Yeah. And Indigo gives chase and he goes down into the down to the stairs. And as soon as he gets to the bottom of the stairs, you see Rugen throw this knife and get Indigo right in the stomach.
Yes. And then when he stumbles back because of that, he gets stabbed in the shoulder, too.
Right. So it's like Mandy Patinkin and Christopher Guest in the scene. Just like
they kill it.
Kill it. Not just because someone actually dies in it, but it's the fact that, like, what is it? We, after Indigo gets, like stabbed in the gut, Indigo says, I'm sorry, Father, I failed you. And that's when Rugen says, you must have been that Spanish brat that I taught a lesson to all those years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, have you spent your entire life to come here only to fail? I think that's the worst thing I've ever heard. How marvelous. And then it cuts to...
That's our tagline. That's our new tagline.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like the worst thing I've ever heard of. How marvelous.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Yeah. And then it cuts to Buttercup in her room. And she's...
There's a beautiful ornate box in front of her. She opens it up. Again, her dress, her hair, her tiara, this beautiful silver dagger. It's gorgeous. And she contemplates it and runs her fingers down the blade. And then she picks it up and she holds it betwixt her bosoms, which, by the way, her sternum would get in the way. And that's bad science. That's where the science breaks down for me on this one. You can't stab yourself through your sternum. I mean, you could, but it would take much more strength. You're better finding a rib, you know, or like going for your guts somewhere. Yeah. But that's not important because she holds the knife to herself.
It's very dramatic how she holds it to herself. So I don't really hate the movie for that.
Oh, I'm not. It's beautiful because what happens next is, okay. We know that I'm a bit of a feminist, but sometimes some sort of misogyny shows up and I kind of don't hate it the worst. So when you hear Wesley go, there's a shortage of perfect breasts in this world. It would be a pity to damage yours.
It kind of makes even like...
I mean, it's not the worst, most sexist thing you've ever heard.
It's not because...
I've known some men with some beautiful breasts.
Because to him, those are the world's perfect breasts.
They literally are. She's the prettiest woman in the world, according to the book.
According to the book, yeah. But even if you didn't want to necessarily take the book as being entirely literal, you could... I mean, with what we've seen in the movie... You could very easily be like, yep, those are the perfect breasts according to him. So he would be saying that. And
she goes, oh, my Wesley! Ditches the knife, runs over to him.
And gets right on top of him on the bed and starts kissing him. And she's like, Wesley, why won't you hold me? And
all careful. Gently.
He's like,
gently.
At a time like this, that's all you can think to say? Gently. She lifts up his head.
And then she lets go and he goes, ka-tunk.
And he goes, gently. And then she lets go.
And his head hits the headboard. Oh. And he's like, oh. So then we cut back to the banquet, don't we?
Yeah, we cut back to the banquet hall where Rugen is watching Indigo. I always kind of assumed that Rugen was just going to stand there and watch Indigo die.
Yeah, he would. He's that guy.
Yeah.
But then Indigo gets the knife out of himself.
Which probably wouldn't be the right thing to do. But
no, I have taken first aid, a lot of first aid, and like first responder-ish training. Mm-hmm. And you leave a stabby implement in there and you like build a thing around it. So you get to somebody who can, if it's stopping the blood from coming out of the hole they've just made in you, you leave it in there.
Though with what he does later, it kind of makes sense why he wouldn't necessarily want a dagger in there with all of the movement. But
100%. Yeah. Yeah. We're assuming that if you get stabbed, you should go seek medical help, not avenge your father.
We're assuming that you are not someone who has just been stabbed in the gut after not recognizing that you were being led into a trap. And maybe you don't have to like go on with your revenge quest.
But let's go on with our revenge quest.
Yeah. And so he takes out the dagger and he holds this wound in his stomach and he pulls out his sword and he says,
his hands are covered in blood. Mm-hmm. He's exhausted and sweaty.
Yeah.
And he holds his sword proudly up.
Right. And this is when Rugen stabs him in one shoulder. But he like is going for the heart. But Rugen's sword is going for Indigo's heart. And Indigo deflects it so it goes into his shoulder. Uh-huh. And then he goes for it again. And then Indigo deflects it to the other shoulder. And Indigo stands up and he says, hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You kill my father. Prepare to die.
And begins to advance on Rugen.
Yeah.
And Rugen's like, what the f***?
Yeah. And so they go through this whole swordplay. You hear this one phrase said over and over
Hello,
and over.
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. And he comes with more and more conviction every time.
And he's like, and it's towards the very end, he's saying, he's like yelling it at him. And he backs Rugen up into a corner and he like stabs him in his shoulders. And he says, offer me riches. And he's like, yes. And he like slashes Rugen's cheek. And then offer me money. And he's like, yes.
All that I have and more.
Offer me everything I ask for. And he's like, all that I have and more, please. And then he's
Rugen goes to take a swipe at him.
Yeah. And that gets deflected. And Indigo, being the great swordsman that he is, stabs him right in the chest. And he says, I want my father back, you son of a
story time.
Yeah.
So Jen was off for church one night on movie night. Every movie night, every once in a while, we would watch secular films if it kind of had a good moral plot. We'd watch Christian films or Christian edits of films or a whole gamut because the pastor was like a movie file. And that's great because we are too, obviously. Okay, so Jen's off. We don't have an edited movie. Jen used to edit the movies if they had a little bit of questionable material in them. You know, largely left alone. So Jen was off and me and pastor was like, you know, it's pretty good. We could watch Princess Bride. Oh, yeah, I love Princess Bride. Okay, we'll watch that tonight. I have it on DVD already. That's amazing. We'll just pop it in the DVD player. Watch it on the projector with everybody. You bring the popcorn. I got you, man. So we've got a dozen kids, 9 adult people. We're in a church. We're watching this movie. We get to this scene. We get 3/4 of the way through the scene. We get 5/8. We get 7/8 in the way of the scene. And he goes, ask me, give me everything I ask for. And I was like, oh no. And I turn and I look at Pastor and he looks at me and he goes, oh no, but only with his eyeballs. And the screen goes, I want my father back, you son of a... We both like turn from each other to the children. No reaction. Nothing. Not a god dang thing. They didn't even hear it. They just were, all of them were engrossed. They loved the movie. They were like with their popcorn, like staring at the screen, like eyes forward, no side talking or phone business. Like they were in it, which was amazing. And it shows just how vulgar language is a very questionable discussion because like it's the intent behind the words, not the words themselves that are really what, okay, sorry, I'm not preaching at you, I promise, but that's really what God cares about.
Right.
So like, okay, yeah, he's calling this guy a son of a bitch, but like, he killed his dad. He had a lifelong vendetta against him. Like, it's not the worst word you could call a guy, especially if you're planning on killing him. Like, and the kids didn't notice. And like, it still was one of the best movie nights we've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sorry about it. But that moment where we were both like locked eyes and we're like, we done fudged this one up. We promised them, you know, quality non-vulgar content. And I wouldn't say that it is vulgar, but... we tried not to use any of the standard swears. We screwed it up a few times more, too. Like, it was fine. It's fine. It's fine. Kids hear it everywhere. The second they stepped outside the church, I'm friends with tons of them on Facebook. I advertised this podcast. I don't mind. They know how I feel.
Yeah. So, after Rugen is dead, he slumps over and then falls down.
Like, Inigo looks at him for a second, and he's like, well, job done. And he just leaves.
Yep. Well, he doesn't want to be sticking around.
There's wisdom in that.
Mm. So then we're back at the scene with Buttercup and Wesley.
Yes.
And she's just like, I've done the terrible thing, Wesley. I got married, but I didn't want to. And he was like, never happened. It's like, what? It was like, never happened. Did you say I do? And she's like, she's like, oh, I was there. An old man said man and wife. And he was like, did you say I do? And she was like, no. I was like, then didn't happen. Isn't that right, Your Highness?
Dun, dun, dun.
And Humperdinck, who has been where this entire time? Lost in his own castle?
Probably. He takes his sweet time about it. I'm sure he had to go fix his hair or something. Anyways, he's at the door. He's like, a situation I plan on remedying immediately.
Yeah. But before that, to the death. And Wesley's just like, no, to the pain. And it's this whole speech about how he's going to be this like eyeless, mouthless, legless thing.
He goes, and then I'll take your eyes. Yeah. And then he goes, yes, then my ears. Let's get on with it. And he goes, no. Oh, no. I'm saying it with more words because here's the thing. It's so stark and concise that it's wonderfully and crisply delivered by Cary Elwes. You cannot live without this scene kind of scene. But he's like, no, your ears you keep so that every crying woman, every wailing child, every person who says, "Dear God, what is that thing?" will resound perfectly in your undamaged ears. And he's like, "What?"
Yeah. And then Wesley raises up the sword and he says, "Drop your sword." Oh, no.
He goes, "I think you're bluffing. I think you're bluffing." And he's like, "True. I could be bluffing. I could have no strength at all. And yet," and then he stands up, he raises his sword. It's a little wobbly, but come on, how could you, would you be able to raise up 12 pounds of sword? And like holds it at eye level and he looks at him in the face. And that's when he says,
"Drop your sword."
And he might as well have dropped a load because dude, like his sword clamps and he's like, "Heck a seat." And he gestures with his sword and he like sits down and he goes, "Tie him up.
Yep.
Make it as tight as," and then it cuts to the hallway and he goes, "Make it as tight as you like." And then Fezzik and Inigo hear him from the hallway.
Inigo hears him. We don't see Fezzik yet.
Oh, right. Okay. So Inigo hears him in the hallway, runs in. She's got him tied at the ankles, wrists, and middle already, by the way. And it's been like 15 seconds. Good for her.
Yeah. Going back to that whole like speech that Wesley does.
Oh, yes. We can discuss if you'd like.
Well, the only thing that was coming to my mind was, did you see Venom with Tom Hardy? The Spider-Man villain?
I did.
Do you know the very famous line from Venom that made people like cringe?
No.
It was at the end and Venom is like stopping this burglar in process and he's talking to the criminal and he's like making this whole like, "I'm going to eat your head and then I'm going to eat your arms and then I'm going to eat your legs and you will be wafting in the wind like this armless, legless, headless thing like a turd in the wind." You never heard that speech?
I'm sure I did, but I've completely blocked it now.
It's like in that movie they were trying to do this speech from The Princess Bride, but they failed on every level.
Wonderful.
I don't know. That's just like, it was the antithesis. It was like that monologue was like the better version of the, I don't know why I thought about that.
No. He seems to me, he lived his life like a turd swaying in the wind.
Humperdinck?
You never know where to cling to when your turds come in. And I would have liked to have known that speech, but I was just a kid and that speech came out long ago. My turd speech ever did. Sorry.
Okay. I feel
did I bring down my side of the conversation to the level that you feel like you accidentally went to?
I did not. Like halfway through that rant, I was like, "This isn't going anywhere, Lydia. Maybe you should just bail."
It seems to me you pooped your pants like a poop up in the wind.
But you brought it back.
Humperdinck and that Venom guy making stinking.
Yeah. Okay. So back in the bedroom.
Tied up. And then Wesley goes, "Oh," and he falls down a little bit and he goes, Inigo takes over the tying him up, Humperdinck up or whatever. And he's like, "Hey, go help him." And she's like, Why does Wesley need helping?
I was like, "Because he has no strength.
He's been mostly dead all day."
And Humperdinck says, "I knew he was bluffing. I knew he was bluffing." And as a sword gets poked into his face.
Yeah, I knew he was bluffing.
Yeah. And then it goes like, "Do you want me to kill him?" And he's like, "Nah, I just want him to be left alone with his cowardice."
Yes. And that is the worst. Mm-hmm. That is the perfect punishment for a man like Humperdinck.
And then they're both like, "Well, where's Fezzik?" He's like, "I don't know where. I thought he was with you." And
he goes, "Inigo!" Yeah. From outside.
Yeah.
So they open the windows and there's Inigo. He's standing there and he's just like, Fezzik's at the they're probably two stories up, I'd say. And Fezzik's standing there with four white horses, and he goes, "Hey, I was looking around, and I saw these horses, and I thought, well, there's four of us if we ever find that lady." And he tilts a little bit, and he goes, "Hello, lady." And she does a little finger waves.
It's adorable, considering the first time they met, he was giving her the Andre the Giant neck pinch.
Yes. Yes. I think she got a feel of who he was when they were on their little journey together.
Right.
But then she jumps down and she does this beautiful little fall, and Andre's back wasn't good enough to catch her, right? Is this a Sean fact?
Right.
Well, regardless, he couldn't hold up the weight of a robin, right? And so she's lowered to him on cables and they look adorable in each other's faces.
Mm-hmm.
And then Inigo's in the window frame with Wesley and he's just like, "You know, I've been looking for revenge for so long. I just don't know what to do with myself anymore."
And Wesley says, have you ever considered piracy? You'd make a wonderful Dread Pirate Roberts.
So then they both presumably jump down, and then the four of them ride off into the sunrise.
Sunrise. Yeah, because it's not the sunset, because it was night. Yeah.
So movies play fast and loose with like daylight.
Right. But they ride off. Grandfather narrates saying that, you know, as soon as they saw sun, they knew that they were safe. And as the sun rose, Wesley and Buttercup go in for a kiss.
They reached for each other, and then he closes. It cuts to him and he's closing the book, and he's like, well, and Fred's like, wait, what happened? And he goes, it's kissing. And Fred's like, I don't mind so much.
Yeah.
And then he flips open to something that happens a lot in the book, but doesn't happen in the movie at all. And he goes, there have been 5 perfect kisses in the whole of human history, and this kiss surpassed them all. And then they have an amazing kiss. My heart swells. Mm-hmm. It cuts back to the kids. Fred's like, could you come back tomorrow and maybe read it again? And the grandpa turns around and he looks at him and he says,
As the grandpa is leaving the room, grabs his stuff, and grandson says, come back tomorrow. Grandfather says, as you wish.
So we cut to the credits, and then whatever the guy's name is has a song.
Do, 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 do.
And Jen once bought me the soundtrack, and it goes a little something like this. Our love is a storybook story, but it's as real as the feelings I feel. Our love is a storybook story.
The song Storybook Love, performed by Willie DeVille and produced by Mark Knopfler, who also does the score.
The Knopfler was what was killing my brain just then.
Yeah.
It was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Song at the 60th Academy Awards.
Our love is a storybook story. And it's not great. I mean, I want to love that song. I have that song memorized. It started with, and he loved her oh so much. Like, the lyrics are, like, I want to like it, and I do like it, but I like it in the wrong way.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
I will say it doesn't go like full like 80s. There were a lot of, maybe it was mostly 90s, but there were like a lot of.
Oh, it's acoustic. You should know it's acoustic all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just in a nylon guitar, but it could just be an acoustic.
Bing, 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 bing. Like, you know, if you've seen the movie, you know that chord progression, that riff, that blurb. That...
Yeah, I've played that little stringy thing to you a couple of times, maybe.
Yes, that's why we're married still. Okay, but like they play it, and then like they do some scory stuff during the credits. There's nothing really exciting after that. I mean, like, we've reached the end of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do like this whole cast of characters and everything, and they show like every actor and their character name. And
Carrie's is when he turns around for the first time as the farm boy.
Mm-hmm.
It's delightful.
Yeah,
and then I can turn it off.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it ends with Billy Crystal or something like that.
Yeah, as Miracle Max, and it actually the last scene of that is Max and Valerie waving goodbye, like they're like, have fun storming the castle.
That's so cute.
It's adorable.
You guys. Now we've got, unless there's a Sean fact or some factoids that we think of that we have to share, we have to do our shocked and applaud moments, mm-hmm. and I don't know where we're gonna land on this.
Yeah,
we should start with Jen. We always start with us. Get your opinion out there, girl. Get it.
What shocked me about this movie? During the 80s, there were a lot of fantasy films. And maybe it doesn't shock me now, but I remember coming out of the theater thinking, where's all like the magic and the wizards and stuff?
Yes. I never thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being heavily influenced in the 80s by some of those fantasy movies, maybe Kroll in there. Dragon Slayer was one of them. Not Dragon's Lair with the video game, but Dragon Slayer was another one. But there were some. We had a kind of resurgence in the early 2000s with Lord of the Rings and stuff, but it was really the 80s around the time of D&D really being popularized. And so I came out of this film feeling like it had princesses and
you got stuff. One magical pill and you were like, well, that's not enough.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting because now I would see this film and I would say, and I would congratulate it on being able to present fantasy in such an endearing way that you don't have to bring out the ghosts and goblins and the dragons and all of that stuff to make it presentable to a generation that just wants to see fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of how Game of Thrones is played up. Game of Thrones doesn't really have a lot of magical elements into it. It's like a digestible version of fantasy for most people who aren't into fantasy, which is kind of like why I rail against Game of Thrones. But like, here's the thing, like this movie is so much more like sincere and goofy, and like it threads this line between like being very funny but then being very serious.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like Game of Thrones is nothing but serious, and it takes itself way too seriously as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I agree. It's like, as like the one thing, it's touted as this fantasy, but really it's just more like a historical romance slash action slash comedy slash all these different things. There's like maybe a few fantasy elements.
Yeah
All
right, good one. Good
yeah.
one. So which one of us goes next?
Well, I would have to say that probably my shocked moment watching this lately is just how much this speaks to the year 2020. Like at one point, Humperdinck is defeated by a guy with a mask.
They're all the rage. I think everybody will be wearing them in the future, Lydia.
They're terribly comfortable. Anyways. Yeah. I mean, that maybe that's a goofy thing because, like, I can't really. I guess I could rail about how Buttercup is kind of treated as a bit of an object, but even still, like, I mean, it kind of makes sense in the time frame.
Yes, but Florence is again a fictional place, and when you're in a fictional place, it's kind of nice to be able to play fast and loose with the misogyny.
Mm-hmm.
But I get you on that. But every shocked moment doesn't have to be like super deep. If we go, mm-hmm. if we do dark dive every single time, I don't want to take a movie that I've loved and like be like, well, mm-hmm. let's be mad that it's whitewashed. Let's be mad that it's sexist. Let's be mad that I want to acknowledge those things, and especially when they're current in their media, I want to talk about that stuff. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm not going to set on fire any of the movies that we've watched because there's a reason that they're like...
Right. A lot of it seems to be like we have to nitpick something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes the easiest thing to pick at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're growing as critics of media. Okay. Thank you for growing with us.
So for clarity, your shocked moment is
how much it seems to like relate to the year 2020.
OK. All right. I'm with you on that. I think I might... You know, I tend to do this, but follow along after you. I forget how much influence this movie has in my life. Maybe not that I think of it as relating to 2020, but how the characters and the arcs of the people in this, I'm often surprised that by like my conviction of actions, I want to be as strong-willed as Inigo and as honest to my own emotions and following through. I want to be as pure of heart as Buttercup and as playful and powerful as Fezzik is. I want to be like that too, you know? Who doesn't want to? I want to, if I'm having a shitty time at work, I want to be as funny as the albino. Like, there's nothing to not, there's no one in this film that I don't imitate in some way. And I find that shocking watching it years later and being like, oh, mm-hmm. oh, for real. No, I act that way. And mm-hmm. like, I can't tell if it's I came to this movie and I was like, yeah, I want to be like that. Or if the movie followed me and I was like, yeah, that's the most awful thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
How wonderful.
What was your most applauded moment?
All over like a storybook story.
Oh, it's just... The lyrics are bad.
How he worshipped the ground she walked.
Like, it's bad. Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's not the worst. I did have it really fully memorized for a while. Anyways, I think it's something you pointed out earlier, that the storytelling is so exactly thorough. I feel like the storytelling is so well enacted. The pacing is phenomenal. It's mm-hmm. not—it's not just that I'm a fan of the film, because y'all know one of my favorite top three films of all time is Night of the Living Dead. Mm-hmm. And we talked at great length about that film, and the pacing did not hold up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's because I'm a child of the 80s or not, but like the pacing of this film, the comedic beats of this film, the amount of romance versus I'm like, I don't want to watch a kissing book. Right? I feel you, Fred. We had a moment. And at the end of the film, I'm like, yeah, no, they've earned it. They get to kiss now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and when they decide to break the tension with the grandpa, when mm-hmm. they kept scenes or like sections of the film longer, like when they first arrive at the boat, well, when they first acquire Princess Buttercup, until they get to the Cliffs of Insanity where it feels like a real scene change, that whole brick is really long. And for a kid my age when I first started watching it, it would have been near insufferable. But as an adult, I'm watching it and I'm like, that is chef's kiss, well paced. Okay, so and it sucks. I'm shocked at myself that I'm applauding the fact that the entirety of this movie is delightful. That is it. I'm so sorry. I wish I was more
you're good.
Succinct about it. But Jen, how about you lead us down what's your walk?
What did I really applaud about this? It really is the cultural impact for me, especially in geeky circles and coder circles. This is Princess Bride is life to a lot of the people that I know. Like it's extended way past its borderline I'm in the culture now kind of way. Like we've talked about like how The Shining has an impact, maybe not on the show, but we've had, you know, we've talked about the impact of other movies in our lives, but this one really kind of takes the cake for me. And also I like all the things that it introduced me to that I know that later I would find exciting or interesting to me. So this was my introduction to Rob Reiner, which eventually led me into This is Spinal Tap, which introduced me to Christopher Guest and all of the Christopher Guest movies like Best in Show and Waiting for Guffman. I mean, Rob Reiner's got a pretty eclectic film history. He's probably mostly known for When Harry Met Sally, but he did A Few Good Men and a few dramas. Misery, he directed Misery.
Oh my gosh.
So
anyone who successfully directs a Stephen King film gets bonus points.
Yeah, and I never heard anything negative come out of Goldman's mouth about the way that they did this movie. It obviously had some differences between it and the book, but if the author's happy about the movie, that usually makes me a little bit happier about the movie.
Mm-hmm. And the movie does, although it leaves out things, Lydia who's pointing out, it might have been a Sean fact, the differences between, like, when they didn't establish how she became a princess and yet it's titular, like, that versus the ending of the book where Wesley and Buttercup don't end up happy ever after. I mean, like, I don't mind them leaving that out. 7-year-old me didn't need that. So I think there was some fixes in the production that are okay if you're reading the book, but it's an older kid's book. I wouldn't hand that to anybody who was less than 13 years old, you know? But I would hand this movie to anybody who I could get away with saying the word around.
I love how animated this live action movie is. There's moments where it just seems like the characters or the actor's face is just a little bit more expressive.
Mm.
I mean, like Andre the Giant saying, "I only dog paddle," and he has his hands up. Or the fact that everything that Wesley does on the wall and just all these different things, how like extra Vecini is.
His face, right?
Yeah, but like, or Buttercup, like throwing herself down the hill.
Why? Yes.
Yeah. So there's just a lot in this film that just kind of like make me feel like it's super animated, even though it is live action. Mm-hmm. And it just draws me in even more because it's like, it's not drawn, but the actors are acting almost like they're cartoon characters.
Yes. They're, you said they're animated, but
they're live action. Oh, they're not drawn, but they're animated to such a degree that they look like a cartoon.
Yes. And because of, again, the pacing and the framework that they've done and the humor and the casting and all the things, like, you're 100% correct. It's just so engaging.
Imagine anyone else playing Inigo Montoya.
No.
No.
I don't accept it.
Yeah. And Mandy Patinkin is a Broadway actor, so they have to, like, be extra on stage. So
And that doesn't necessarily translate well to film. And right. So the fact that he can,
mm-hmm.
Gorgeous.
Right. And he's, like, one of the like, you could tell he's kind of reeling it in on some levels. Like, Cary Elwes seems to be, like, very much a movie or a TV actor, which is completely different acting.
He's pushing out where, like, Patinkin's having to reel it in.
Right.
Yeah, I feel that. Oh, and I don't think you've listened to the Shock Talk yet, have you?
I don't think I've listened to it since the time of this recording, but I think it's coming out
this
next week. So I will be listening to it when all of our applauders do.
We've listened to a rough cut of it together, and it's pretty good.
Good.
I'm excited for, I mean, Jen's going to do some minor edits to it. Like, no, it's just going to, never mind, cut that out. It's going to go straight up there. Oh, sweet. We're just going to get the straight juice. Okay, I'm excited too.
Yeah.
I want to re-listen to it.
Yeah. This is going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Applauders, thank you for joining us as we travel through the land of Florence. And we meet these characters and we eat a chocolate covered miracle pill that brings us back to life, which is like essentially this movie.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
I'd also like to add, I don't know when this part of our episode is going to be released versus when our guest appearance on I Drink Your Podcast is going to happen, but just an extra shout out to I Drink Your Podcast for helping us be a part of their show this month as well.
It's our very first guest appearance, which is like a great honor, and I hope we serve them well, and I hope we're funny.
Yeah, I really hope that they enjoy it, and we have yet to do that, so yeah. Okay, thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, if you get a chance to check them out, do.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe we're on there, maybe we're not. Check out our Twitter. We were probably pushing them pretty hard when we got released, or when we get released.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I mean, craft services will cover a lot of our fancy friends, and we've talked about Shock Talk and Sean and Maddie, and we've talked about a movie, right? Did we cover an entire movie?
An entire movie.
You guys, we have a guest star on our December episode, and they are very near and dear to my heart. Probably love them almost more than anybody else in the whole of the whole world. So I'm going to keep it a surprise, but like, you got to meet us there. It's going to be unreal.
Yeah.
Okay. Good job, guys.
Thank you.
This is Jen McQuaid.
This is Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
We've turned the last page on our review of 1987's The Princess Bride, Applauder. Thank you for listening with your perfect ears, even if you had to ask, dear God, how long is this thing? But if you are searching for just a bit more finality, why not check out this month's Shocked Talk, hosted by our friends Sean and Madeline. It's the after-party show you didn't know you didn't need. Hello. This is your audio engineer and reason there's a shortage of perfect turkey breast in this world, Jen. Did you know that we recently brought our Patreon back online? We're still in the process of updating our catalog of unbleeped episodes. But for only $1 a month, you can get access to those and help pay for our web hosting for our commercial-free feature-length film review. Check out patreon.com/shockedandapplaud for details. Or click the support link on shockedandapplaud.com. We'll be back on December 8th with another epic movie takedown. And one that's so bad, it's been featured on Mystery Science Theater 3000. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
Yay!